accession number 27322, reel 3.
Dennis Keane, reel 3. So, you were...
We're going down on the right, somewhat to the right of the Americans, as far as we knew that we were over on the western side. And I can remember going through a wood, a big wood, working our way across to a point. That was a hill, of course. And hearing people digging in close to us, who we're told were German. And we were going through the German lines and ending up on a hillside where we dug in.
This was in daylight, was it?
No, it was overnight. Where we dug in overnight. And next morning we could see the Germans in front of us retreating in a road about a mile away. I remember doing that because it was one thing that we doubled up. One would normally have two people allocated to a company, two signallers, but we got they'd allocated four this time, and me and a friend of mine, we were the two spares. So we dug in as well, but first thing next morning we were sent back down this hill to battalion headquarters, where we understood that the CO had had a problem. There'd been a problem with the CO of some sort. We didn't know what. Well, I didn't. Because we know he'd had a breakdown. All I remember is digging in, and we did see rather a bit further that time. And again, another day, marching down a long, straight road, being told to keep off the verges because it was probably mine, and carrying a 18 set. Which, for some reason, we never used. And
this was all round Comal.
This was going south from Comal. Right. I know where we were going. I didn't at the time. We were just going. Another day, we were dugging in an orchard, and there was a armoured battle going on all round us. So there were solid shot whistling through the air. We were keeping our heads well down. And then we moved on. I can remember, and I knew this was Mount Pinkcomb. I did know that at the time. I remember digging in on the reverse slope of that. And although it was shelling quite heavily, nothing was touching us because we were too close to the river, on the reverse side, and they were all flying over and missing us. I know we dug in and then immediately moved, and that was another regular bit of infantry experience. You dug in and moved as soon as you dug in. And then we moved on, and the battalion was doing another attack, which we did know. This was after Mount Pinkcomb, and little Scots lad and myself, then quite friend, matey with, we were given a telephone connected to a wire, told it ran back to battalion headquarters, and we was to stop in this ditch by the side of the road till we were told to move. We got a lot of spare cable with us, so we did a little recce for ourselves, and if we moved up just round the corner, we could get nearer where whatever was going on was going on. And so we were able to move into a house, the ground floor of a house. And
this was a shelled house, wasn't it?
Where the battalion was. No, it was a complete one. Because
right.
Don't forget, we were moving far quicker by then. And
so there's just the two of you in there?
Just the two of us, that's right. And we knew that the battalion was doing a river, was crossing the river in front of us, that's all we knew. One of our corporals had dropped in to see we were all right. That was Corporal Gould. And we were there next morning, after light. We were there for hours. Nothing come to over the phone. It didn't seem to be connected, but it didn't seem to have broken. And we were there, and one of our dispatch riders that we knew went past, and we shouted, "Oi, let them know that we're still here." So a bit later, he and another dispatch rider turned up, picked us up, took us down to where the battalion were, just outside a place called Berjou. I knew that at the time. That's all right. We stayed there, and the Germans had gone, and they were retreating. That was the end, as far as we were concerned, that was the end of the war in Normandy. Because by then they'd gone, and we were having a rest.
So had the Worcesters lost many people? I mean, had they done a lot of...
Well, yeah, they had done a lot of fighting. Of course, don't forget that your signallers, a lot of them, battalion headquarters, because they're the line parties. So they're a little bit out of it. And what you pick up, you tend to pick up from other people in battalion headquarters.
Yeah. What sort of a chap was Corporal Gould?
Religious, very nice bloke. In fact, I attended his funeral a few years back. He was a very nice bloke. They all were.
Mm.
Jimmy Norton, who was our main sergeant. In fact, he delivered bread to Wimbush's in Knowles now, before the war.
What made him a good sergeant?
Looking after the blokes. He since told my wife that I was so immature he had to look after me. And that's probably true, because I was at school till I was 16. Not seen much of the world, coming from a small village as well. I suppose I've been protected one way or another all my life.
And it's a big world out there with a lot of seasoned soldiers.
That's
once
right.
You get to
they
a
were.
These yes.
Nearly all of them had been together for 4 years.
Mm.
They joined up together. They joined the battalion in 1940. It was a war-formed battalion.
Yes.
So they all knew one another. Yes. Very difficult to get in amongst them, really.
And you were a lot younger, too.
That's right.
You? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Till, except for about one other chap, the next two were a couple of years older than me.
Yeah.
And they were back. They were lads who had been at work since 14. So a lot more worldly wise than myself. And I wasn't. I accept that now. And from then, after the rest, we moved right across through the American sector. This was our experience of liberation. With apples and things and wine and things being given to you. We were in ducks, the amphibious vehicles, because we were going to do a rip, we were going to cross the Seine. And we did the first Seine crossing. We were in American territory at a place called Vernon, V-E-R-N-O-N. And I think that's probably the first time Jimmy Norton accepted I could do a job. Mm-hmm. I was fit to do the job.
What did he give you to do?
Because By then, anyway, we'd more or less given up on the radios, and we were laying line. Any attack, we laid line immediately behind it. And he and Dozy Denby, which was the other chap I joined the battalion with.
Dozy Denby?
Yeah. He's a pre-war regular. He'd been in India for years, and he looked like it. Really weather-worn. We were given the job of laying the line behind one of the companies to cross the Seine. The ducts hadn't worked, and we were given the job of crossing the Seine by the bomb bridge, because it was tipped up on the near end, and we had to go down what was left of the bridge, across planks, up the other side on planks, and then back onto the part of the bridge which was all in one piece. This was with a mile drum of cable, which weighs, I can't remember, but I think you're getting over 100 pounds weight of cable to start with, although we'd reeled some out by then. It was getting light, but misty. So we got this wretched cable to handle between the two of us, with Corporal Billy Gould as well, just the three of us. Only just the two of us handling the cable while he was trying to find a way across this broken down bridge, getting light, misty, fortunately, keeping our fingers crossed in case the mist lifted and the Germans the other side could see us. Up the top and round to the right, up a road where we were, the company was fired on. So we immediately dived to the side of the road. Again, I can remember the bullets bouncing off this, what was left of the drummer cable, because we pretty well reeled it all out by then. There for an hour or so. Down the road comes a German light car of some sort. Down to the bottom of the road, where apparently nobody stopped it from our company, it just went shooting past. Since found out, it was stopped by the wheelchairs at the bottom. It was a German army photographer, official army photographer, and his car was full of Leicas and other desirable cameras, which of course the wheelchairs got instead of us. Remember the stretcher bearers going up, and then after a while the company commander said, no, okay lads, we don't need you anymore, so you can go back. So back we went, picked up our phone and went back down the bottom of the hill into Vernonette and stayed there all day. Three of us went out at night with another corporal, trying to find one of our companies to lay the line to. And in the woods, we just couldn't find them. Next day, we went off up this road. Again, fired on. We saw a 6-pounder gun knocked out by a German tank, and in the corner, we were just past the corner, other side of the road, our mortars were all firing like mad. There were bullets flying all over the shop, but no artillery fire at all. So a nice summer's day, after lunchtime, sometime in the afternoon, we'd had a sandwich, a bully or something. Gang of us were grabbed to take ammunition up to one of the companies, I think it was B Company, who were up on the right of the hills. we were in a sort of valley. And went up this very, very steep hill with these two of us carrying one of these boxes of 303 rounds. Saw the company clerk, hand it over to him, just about to turn down. Something shot across my boot, and down I went. To describe it properly, you'd have to use an army expression, of course. A over T, right down the bottom of the hill, did a roly-poly, all down the bottom of the hill. The bank at the bottom was sort of like that, and I shot over the bank, landed in the middle of the road, didn't think I'd hurt myself. Remember the second in command shouting, "Get back, you livers," or something or other. Because as we'd rolled down the hill, started to roll down it, we'd seen the company retreating over the top of the hill. They didn't retreat far, actually. Anyway, back up. Well, we went to our corner. Back, we went to the corner, and a bit later, Jimmy Norton said, "Right, we're staying here and digging in." So I got my spade, went to dig in, fell over, and I'd broke my ankle. It did officially count as a wound because it had broken the cut the boot and broken the skin.
So a bullet had cut through the boot.
Yeah, and that's where it knocked me over. But of course, it was this bump at the bottom of the hill that did the real damage. So they put me on the back of a motorbike, who took me down to the RAP.
That must have been extraordinarily painful. I mean,
no, it wasn't. It wasn't at the time. I just fell over.
Right.
It was later.
Yeah.
By the time I got down to the RAP, it was hurting. And the MO says, "They could keep you, but you've got to be better by morning because we'll be moving on." Actually, he was wrong because they stayed there a week and I could probably have stayed with them. So we better send you back. So back I went. Took 3 days to get back.
Really? How did you travel back?
Ambulance. Right. But it was offload at every point, and all right, you are not urgent, you know, you can wait, sort of thing. So obviously the wounded were bunged on in front of me, and did the usual thing, back through dressing stations and advanced dressing stations and things, and ended up back in Bayeux.
Right.
In a Canadian hospital. Presumably along where all the hospitals were.
Yeah.
Never knew the name of it.
Was it a permanent hospital building? I mean,
it was tented. All
right.
Tented.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I know, I think I slept for 2 days. And when I woke up, there was a nice Canadian Red Cross lady offering me toothpaste and shaving stuff and letter writing stuff. And stayed there.
Did you write home to your mum?
Yes, from there. Yeah.
Yeah,
she's still got the first card. "I'm well. I'm not well. I'm in hospital." Cross out what didn't apply. I've still got it somewhere.
What was the attended hospital like? I mean,
fine. Yeah. It was like an ordinary hospital.
Mm.
Except they were army attendants.
Yes.
With obviously red caped nursing sisters.
Yeah.
They're very good.
Did you talk talk to any of the other patients, you know?
We got a few really badly wounded folks, but they were mainly injuries.
Mm.
And it wasn't bad. Anyway, they came round one morning, the MO came round and he says, "Right, not getting any better, it's all still swollen. I'll put you down for evacuation." So that's nice. So you go out tomorrow morning. So next morning, can't go out, it's foggy. The fog was down on the, or mist onto the airfield, so there was no aircraft leaving. And of course, as usual with my body, next day it's all gone down, hadn't it? So, oh, we better keep it in the echo.
You were ready to go home, were you?
Well, like anything. Yeah, sure. Got away from the war for a bit. I got away for much longer if I'd have gone, of course, because they retrained her as well. Anyway, so they kept me in the hospital for a while, popped me up to a convalescent depot, which was just outside Port and Basel. In the in the grounds of a chateau, which is still there. I was there about a month, I suppose.
Right. And your ankle had healed, had it? Or?
It healed up. Yeah. It wasn't a bad break. Didn't do any army training or anything at all. It just got better. Yeah. And one day they sort of looked at you and said, yeah, well, you're fit enough to go back. I'd met one friend of mine by then who'd got a load of bits of shrapnel on his back. Nothing had really penetrated badly. So he hadn't gone home. He was at this convalescent depot. And there was a chap that I'd been in my first 6 weeks with. And then we went down to a different RHU. This one I don't remember the number. Only there a day, and they said we want volunteers to rejoin your regiments. And by then, a lot of us got talking and decided the war was nearly over anyway. Because, I mean, they were up in Holland, you know, miles and miles away from where we were. And if we don't rejoin our own units, we'll be heading for Burma or somewhere. So I think all of us tore into this tent and said, yeah, we'll all go. And that was a most interesting journey because we went by train from Bayeux Station. And it was a mixture of continental stock and American plywood Transportation Corps wagons covered, you know, ordinary trucks, ordinary vans. And we went all the way up to Rouen, off the train, and all the time we were going, we were waiting to put the track back in places. Yes, but
so you were the first train through.
Yeah, literally, it was the first train going through, and by lorry across the Seine at Rouen. Back on the train, and we went right up through the First World War battlefields, through Amiens and Arras, and chugged up there, all the way to just inside the Belgian border, where we were detrained. Again, I think it's why they put the track back. By that time, when we got over onto the train, Rouen, the other side of the river, two of us had decided it was too crowded, so we'd moved up into the little guards thing at the end of the van. You know, they have these little guards compartments stuck up on one end, and two of us had got into there. Wasn't really big enough, but at least got a bit more room than these 40 Homs, 10 horses sort of situation. And we went all the way up to Tournai, it was just inside the Belgian border. We were there a couple of days, and then we went on all the way up to Diest in northern Belgium. Again, on the train.
What did you see? You had a pretty good sort of tour, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah. How much damage was there?
Lot. Yeah. We passed whole trainload of wagons that had been strafed or bombed or something in two or three places. I do remember going through Lisieux and looking up and seeing the basilica. That's a bit that stuck with me, the white basilica right on top of the hill. And now everything else was bombed. And I remember it was all bombed. There were Highland Division signs everywhere. Even we could see that from the train. And
did you see much of the indigenous population?
You know, no, not very really much. A little.
Yeah.
Mainly saw the train driver who... very obliging. When we stopped, he'd let a little bit of steam out of the boiler so that we could get some hot water to make a cup, make our tea, because we're back on 24-hour rations all till we got up to Tournai. And but when we were on German rations, because no British rations were getting that far.
Right. What were German rations like?
Dog biscuits, some sort of meat, and dog biscuits, little biscuits about that square. And that was the same in Dienst. Then they popped us on to lorries to rejoin. By that time, Arnhem must have been over, working the time schedule out. Must have been getting towards the end of the month by the time we got back.
End of September.
Yes, must have been.
Do you know when you were wounded? Do you have a date for that? Or no, that's right, yeah. So
it was around about the 28th of August, I think, something like
that.
Right,
okay. Yeah.
End of August, anyway. Mm. We went up. The Germans were still trying to cut the corridor, even at that time, because I know we were having to stop. And you could see firing going on ahead. Then moving on again. But we did it at night, so I've no recollection at all of how we got where we got to, except I'd rejoined the battalion just outside first of all, went to A echelon, never went to B at all. I don't think B had even got up. Went to A echelon.
And where was it you rejoined?
That was just south of Nijmegen.
Right.
Can't remember the name of the place now. Started with a J, I think. I'm not sure. We joined the battalion just outside Rosbeek. I do know that.
Right, I'll stop you just there. Dennis Keane, end of Reel 3.
Good God.
Dennis Keane, Reel 4. So, you rejoined the 1st Worcesters.
Yeah.
What had they been up to? Did you hear?
Yes. They'd been involved with getting first of all, trying to get up to Arnhem. Mm. They got as far as a place called Elst.
Yeah. What did they tell you about this? Were they talking about it?
Yes, they talked about it. A lot, quite a few of my friends, which were the younger element, had got themselves Browning 45s and camouflage jackets and para camouflage jackets and things. Well, I think we collected quite a few American walkie talkies to use, and they were quite full of it.
Yeah. What was the general consensus about Arnhem? Were they talking about it as a failure? Or
I don't think they looked. I don't think they ever got that far. It was just it happened and that was it, sort of thing. Because it was, in fact, the DCLI that made contact with the airborne in Oosterbeek. And, of course, they sent a couple of companies of Dorsets over to try and relieve them, all from 43rd Div. It was 43rd Div who got the nearest. I joined them there. It was quiet. Not much going on at all. Very quiet for And then we moved a little bit further south, and that was a. We were dogging back battalion, of course, dogging by the side of the hill. And in fact, one night was the only night, and I was on night duty in the signal exchange, and that was the only time I ever used a fuller phone. And every time I used Morse in the whole 11 months.
Yeah.
But we stayed there and we did various bits until the beginning of November, when we and an American division did the first attack inside Germany. It was the first time British troops had been in Germany for 200 years. Apparently, so we had lots of reporters, photographers with us until things started to fly about.
Right. So, tell me about